Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on February 19th. And it is very cold out there, although, gosh, at least it stays light later at night. And the sun has actually got some warmth to it, like on a screen porch in the back or something. Man, the house was like 59 degrees in the back in an unheated room yesterday. So that's kind of cool. Let's see. We have got, and by the way, another one of those Snowmageddon warnings that wasn't that Snowmageddon. So, oh, well, I did have fun getting out and pushing snow this week. Let's see. Michigan gun shows. We got the Taylortown Gun and Knife Show in at the Taylortown Trade Center in Taylor, Michigan. And the Novi Gun and Knife Show up at the Suburban Collection Showplace. That's always a big one. And then the... this one's actually in Ohio, but it's on the state line. It's called the State Line Gun Show in Williams County Fairgrounds, and that's in Montpelier, Ohio, but it's right on the border. So in Ohio, we got the Miami Gun and Knife Show at the Miami Town Elementary School campus, the Cleveland Berea Gun and Knife Show, the Fremont Gun Show in Fremont, Ohio, the Mansfield one at the Richland County Fairgrounds, and let's see. The Cincinnati Gun Show at the Sharonville Convention Center and the Washington Courthouse Special Ops Show at the Fayette County Fairgrounds in Washington Courthouse, Ohio. So Missouri's got a couple. We got, let's see, the Arnold Gun Show, the Nemo Gun Show in Kirksville, and the Black River Gun Show in Poplar Bluff, and the RK Kansas City Gun Show in Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, and even New York's got one, the Great Middletown Firearms Gun and Knife Show at the Orange County Fairgrounds in Middletown, New York. So that's all of the gun shows from most of the listeners. Now, there may be some listeners, I don't know if it's really most of the listeners, but it's the ones that call in occasionally, okay? So we get a call once in a while. I got some emails from a guy in Florida. I get all sorts of things. So, It's interesting, and I did put up, I actually haven't put up the most recent ones. I should check it. Ed Bondarenka had enlightened me to the free ability to put podcasts up on a platform called Anchor and also Spotify, which was in the news because of that whole Joe Rogan thing. And so I thought, well, what the heck, I'll put a couple up. And I ought to check to see if I've still got, if I've got any hits on them at all. And I haven't really promoted them. I don't really promote the show from, I don't do a, you know, what do they call it? Monetization of the websites. And, you know, I don't really promote the website for anything other than people who would like to listen to the radio show, the podcast. So I do have email to it, which is dick@triggertalkradio.com. And I do get all your messages. Sometimes it takes me a couple weeks to get back to you on them because I have to look up something or whatever, but I will eventually get back to you. Let's see. Michigan State Police still running at 771,519, which is up 42, almost 4,300 from last month. but we won't have any new numbers till March 1st. Let's see. Women on Target, remember that? That's June 11th, and we're going to start talking about that. We'll have some guests in here. Maybe we'll have some donors and things like that, people that are supportive of it. So that comes up in June 11th. So you should mark that on your calendar that the women in your life, whether they are spouses or girlfriends or granddaughters or daughters or whatever, they can take the Women on Target event. And that is a lot of fun. And that is June 11th. There's also a thing called Kids on the Range Day on July 30th. So a lot of busy things going on. I can't wait for the weather to warm up and be nice and outside stuff. It'll be a lot of fun. I got an email this week from, what's her name, something Andrade. And she is the woman that runs the Rolling Sculpture car show down in Ann Arbor. It's actually July 15th this year. And after postponing it for 2 years now, 20 and 21, they're going to try and do it again. So that's good. The Rolling Sculpture Car Show is a lot of fun because you pull the cars down, they block all the streets off, the restaurants are open, people are walking around. It's just a fun Friday afternoon from about 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock they start staging you, and then 3 o'clock they open it all to the public and everything, and just a blast. And it's fun because I like to hang out and talk to people about cars and look at other cars, and then at night, gosh, it's so much fun at the end when we all start up and leave, and the town is full of antique cars. It's a lot of fun. Let's see. I was going to talk about this a bit. And I got to say, it's inconclusive, okay? And that is, we had a listener that called about molybdenum bullets, okay? Now, that's called, typically they call them moly-coated bullets, okay? And that was a big deal back in the, started in about 1997, 1998. It was all the rage, okay? And molybdenum disulfide, which is known as moly, and not Molly like, no, is that right? Isn't there a drug that the kids take called Molly now? I think I've seen that on TV shows. Okay, not that kind of Molly, okay? This is molybdenum disulfide, and it's like a black powder. Think of it like almost like, you know, graphite and stuff, where it's a black, slick compound, and it's used to coat copper-jacketed bullets, okay? And it lubricates the bullet, and it reduces the friction when the bullet travels down the bore. And this is meant to facilitate a long string of shots between cleaning without affecting accuracy. However, it's not quite that simple, and it does have some drawbacks, okay? And this is, the listener said, look up the moly coating and microfractures. And so I was reading a lot about the metallurgy of the barrels and how the moly works and everything. And this is kind of the gist of what they're talking about. They say it can destroy your barrel because water gets trapped and causes severe pitting. Temperature changes can cause the metal to sweat. Having the gun like inside a warm house and then taking it outside, it can sweat, and that can cause corrosion. Moly is particularly difficult to get out of the barrel. Moly-conditioned barrels shoot standard copper won't shoot standard copper bullets accurately, and stainless steel barrels are also affected. And so, what they talk about is the fact that if you can imagine. The bullets, and you can buy bullets already moly-coated. That's just the projectiles. You can buy, loaded cartridges that use moly bullets. So they're still out there, and people can use them if they want to use them. The idea is that it's supposed to make it, slicker inside your barrel when it goes down. So consequently, there's less friction. The bullet does not build up as much pressure behind. Actually, you technically, when they check these, you don't. It doesn't speed up. It actually, you lose about 50 feet per second because it's the bullet is moving more freely through the bore, and it's not building up the higher pressures that accelerate it. So it's just an interesting concept, and some people think it really works great for accuracy, and some people think it doesn't work for accuracy. And I've read all sorts of things where guys are talking about the whole corrosion thing, and you got to read about it. And it's funny because people are on the internet going, "Well, it's got to be true. I read about it on the internet." I honestly can say I can understand the benefits of it, but the problem too is that, let's say you're going to shoot like 300 rounds or something like that without cleaning, and that'll help keep the bore clean, and you'll get more. It'll be more accurate through that whole 300 round range that you're shooting. Okay, but then when you clean it, then it's going to take 10 or 12 or 15 rounds to build up the moly again, before you get your accuracy back again. So I want to say there's some trade-offs on it, okay? It's like when people talk about shooting a fouling shot, you know, when you look, if you look at your bore, there is not a, it is not a, an absolutely shiny, polished, perfect surface. If you look at it with one of the bore scopes where you're magnified a lot, it's full of little fissures and cracks and holes and pits and stuff like that. And so the idea can be that the MOLLE helps kind of like plate those almost and make it slicker coming through. The same is true where people talk about shooting, copper bullets, and that the first couple of rounds of copper, after you've cleaned the barrel of regular copper bullets, replate or kind of fill in those little... this is all theoretical, okay? Because for everybody who says that you can get better accuracy out of it, there's somebody who says, oh, no, it has corrosion in the barrel and it affects the accuracy worse than and blah, blah, blah. So I want to say, if you like MOLLE bullets, go for it. If you don't like MOLLE bullets, don't go for it, okay? The other thing is that there are other newer coatings. Now, there's one called like HFB or something like that, and it is a white powder. It's not as messy and stuff. They actually explain, you know, how you can take regular copper bullets and you put in, for every pound of bullets, you put in like an eighth of a teaspoon of MOLLE powder, and then you run it in the tumbler, and it kind of impregnates it, and then you have to dry them off and wipe them off, and they can be messy. Think of graphite when you get it on your fingers and stuff. So I want to say I am inconclusive on this right now. If anybody's got any opinions on MOLLE coating and what they've experienced, did you have any corrosion issues? Matter of fact, this one story I was reading where a guy, he MOLLE coated like a whole bowl of steel balls, okay? Maybe like, 50 caliber balls, like for a, but not lead, steel balls, okay? And he just for a test, and he MOLLE coated them, and then he let them sit in an open tub in his basement where it's got, you know, moisture and stuff, humidity in the air and all that stuff. And it's been there for 2 years and there's not a bit of corrosion on it. So who knows? I don't know. The whole thing about it supposedly filling in little fissures and cracks and stuff, and then as the next round comes through, it actually, that can move it and push it and cause little rifts. Riff, R-I-F-F-S is the term they used, in the surface smoothness and stuff. I believe that, but I don't know that it's enough to make a difference from accuracy or not. I've found that when I use a nice clean barrel and I'm shooting nice, clean, polished, bullets, especially nowadays when you shoot the ones with the high or low friction, the extra low drag ones and stuff like that with the good ballistic coefficients and stuff, then you're really helping things because you're actually creating the ballistic as it goes through the air, the smoothness of the airflow over it. And actually, I've got to tell you, this is how amazing they get when they're talking about, what the MOLLE does for you or doesn't do for you. Well, they claim that if you're shooting a copper bullet in a boat tail copper bullet, okay, so you guys who are hunters and long-range people and stuff know what I'm talking about, where the projectile itself comes back and then it tapers off like a boat tail, they call it. The old boat tail riv, boat tails like the old Hispano Suiza type of cars and stuff like that, where it angles in at the back. Well, they said that the reason that act, now I do not subscribe to this, but I'm reading, well, it's got to be true. It's on the internet. I was reading where somebody said that if you use a boat tail bullet in a regular steel barrel And then what it does is as the grooves are the lands and the grooves imprint themselves in the projectile as it's going down the barrel, it actually like squeezes it out. And in the boat tail portion, it squeezes it out into little fins. And that's what makes the boat tails more accurate. I don't believe that for a second, okay? But somebody comes up with that theory on the internet, and so now there'll be people out there spreading it. Somebody on the radio may go, gee, I heard Dick talking about how the non-Molly bullets, they squeeze the lead out into the boat tail area and make little fins, so it's like the fins on a missile then. No, I don't know that to be true, but it's on the internet out there. Oh, gosh. Let's see. Speaking of on the internet, this one made me laugh. I actually looked to see if this was a joke, but this happened. This came out last weekend on, I think it was Sunday the 13th, which, by the way, was the day that Matthew Stafford won the Super Bowl. And, I gotta say, I really enjoyed that game. And I enjoyed watching him afterwards and watching him play with his kids and the confetti and all that kind of, just a lot of fun. And he is really an upright kind of guy. So at any rate, so what happens on the 13th, on Sunday, the Bureau of ATF put out a tweet. Now, why would the ATF be tweeting? Okay, at any rate, I want to say that, okay? Are we paying our government agencies that really don't need to exist, like the ATF? But the thing is, are we paying them to tweet out snarky little things on holidays and stuff like that? Who thinks this is a good idea? I got to say that the whole Twitter thing, so it's like when you started writing emails and somebody always said, you know, just because you can write an email doesn't mean you should. You know, people fire off a nasty response to somebody, and then if they had just thought about it for 2 minutes or had to write it down or actually type out a real letter, that's like when you get emails that have, you know, 40 CCs on them, and it's like, do I really need this? But at any rate, here's the ATF sending out a tweet to people that says the ATF tweet is encouraging individuals to rat out former or current partners for selling guns. The ATF tweet makes it clear that the agency would like to send agents to meet and treat the former and or current partners for a Valentine's Day surprise. The tweet featured a photo of a broken heart and began by saying, Valentine's Day can still be fun even if you broke up. It says the tweet does not define what constitutes buying or selling illegally, but the fact is that they're out there saying, you know, you can get back at your ex. If you think he's doing something illegal with guns, maybe he sold one to a friend. You can't do that, you know. Well, yes, you can, actually. But the thing is that they want you to rat them out. Is this the Soviet Union? No, or Nazi Germany? You know, like, what's his name? George Soros, who used to rat out people. And I got to say, I was just getting ready. It was too depressing. I didn't want to watch it last night. It was a new article about, or a new documentary about Anne Frank. And, you know, you just got to think about the people who were afraid, and they were afraid of neighbors, and they were afraid of being ratted out because of their religion. Okay, well, how about ratting somebody out because they're gun owners? Okay, already most gun owners are like, just leave me alone. I don't want to talk. I mean, I talk about guns, but and amongst friends, we talk about guns, okay? But, you know, most people aren't out there advertising the fact that they are gun owners or that they shoot for fun or shoot trap or competitively or whatever. They just want to be left alone, okay? But here's the ATF trying to get you to rat out your old boyfriend or your old girlfriend. And what kind of society are we getting to where our government agencies are encouraging people to rat out people for something they might think might be illegal. I want to say my friends and I, I don't as much anymore, but we buy and trade guns and things like that. Hey, do you want this? Dick, I'm thinking about getting this, and I'd like to get something new. Would you like this old one? Well, yeah, I'll take that. How much you want for that? You know, something like that. So that's not illegal. That is perfectly illegal, okay? Or perfectly legal, not illegal. Okay. Speaking of things that are interesting and ratting out people and stuff, we have got Ed from Ypsilanti on ammo. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Wait a minute. Did I hear that right? You're associating me with ratting people out?
No. You?
Oh,
no.
Okay. Why? So anyways.
Why did I associate you with ratting people out? How did I do that?
I don't know. When I heard the radio switch over to the phone, I thought that's not speaking of ratting people out. Here's whatever. Anyway.
No, that's not what I was saying at all. Go ahead, Ed.
So, yeah, one thing about the ratting out, how many ex-girlfriends really know what their boyfriends are doing with guns and just imagine or just rat them out of spite like revenge porn, you know?
Yeah.
That's one. This is just ridiculous. But back to bullets, Theron posted something I found incredibly interesting. Did you intend to talk about these dumbbell slugs?
Dumbbell slugs. They're the big one-piece ones or the ones that have multiple little pieces in them?
No, Theron posted something about it, and I thought, this is ridiculous, and I'm watching this video. You and I had talked a couple months ago, I think, about rifled sabots. Rifle barrels and sabots.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got me saying it wrong too. And they're the inability to get them. And then it turns out they've got these little. They look like little lead dumbbells, and they put them in a shotgun shell and fire them out, and they remain stable. They don't spin. They're accurate. They punch like crazy, and then they have a version of it that looks like two automotive pistons end-to-end with one sharing a connecting rod. Of course, it's stiff with O-ring grooves. And I'm like, what? You're talking about Molly, the influence of Molly or lead on a barrel, and I'm thinking rubber O-rings. And they're talking about how fantastic these things are.
I'll have to look and see. I know of some different styles of slugs. Now, are we talking it's like a single dumbbell that is the bore diameter?
Yeah.
I have seen variations on that. I had not heard them called dumbbell slugs. I'll have to look that up. I don't know when Theron was talking about that, maybe, or when did he post it? Something on Facebook or something?
Yeah, on Facebook a couple days ago. It was a time waster for me. I got trapped into watching this video, but I thought, man, if my father-in-law can get something like that, because they seem to work equally well in rifled and smoothbore barrels, and they show that.
Well, I know that there are some. I have seen several self-defense-style slugs like that. I've also seen people do all sorts of oddball things where they have little ones that have chains in them, weights
chains. Chain shot.
They have them with flechettes, which are like little needles, all sorts of stuff. And I want to say, I would think from the slug standpoint, from a self-defense standpoint, you're kind of negating the idea of having a home defense gun if you're shooting a single slug.
Right. I wasn't thinking that it was. I was thinking it was probably a replacement for these slugs for rifled barrels, you know, that you can't find anymore.
Well, you know what? I'll have to look into what you called it and what Theron called it, and then I'll have to compare some of them because there are some that are very neat, but I don't know if that's the ones that he's referring to. I mean, we actually – do you remember – and I allegedly have a couple of these the ones that are dragon's breath, okay? They actually shotgun shells that are like pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, well, thanks. The music's playing, Ed, so I'm going to have to get off here, okay?
Bye.
Yeah, bye. I'll look into that. I'll write that down. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and we've got some calls online here. We'll take Larry from Milan first. Hi, Larry. How are you?
Morning. Good morning, Dick. I've got an old World War II P-08 German Luger, and I notice it's 9mm, and I can purchase three different weights of bullets, 147, 124, 115. Are any of those, does it matter what kind of pressure should be in that gun? Does a lighter bullet create less barrel pressure than a heavier bullet?
True. Okay, so what happens is, I want to say this: the standard for any kind of 9mm ammo is the 115 grain. Okay, I mean, you can get things down to like 87 grain lightweight bullets and things like that, but the standard is pretty much the 115 grain bullet. Okay.
Okay.
124. Sometimes people use those in self-defense. They might looking for a little more weight. And then the 147s are kind of unusual. People use them in, well, they could be subsonic. They could be competition kind of things where they're lightly loaded. But I want to say I would be using the 115 grain. Now, in reality, during wartime, some of the 9mm ammo was hotter than others, okay? Especially if they planned to use it in, and this is true across the board of small handgun calibers, like the 7.62 by 25 Tokarofs and things like that. The ones intended for pistols were typically a little bit lighter loads, and higher pressure loads were used in submachine guns because it functioned them better, and they were I want to say because many of those were, you know, blowback kind of design functioning from a open bolt. They need to have plenty of pressure to function, and especially not hang up, feeding correctly and stuff like that. That is in a very high cyclic rate submachine gun. But in a semi-automatic like a P-08 or a Luger or something like that, then you're fine with the 115 grain and the lower pressure.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you know, I would say one of the things is that most of those wartime military rounds and stuff were designed for full metal jacket rounds. And so if you are using it and trying to use it as self-defense and you're going to have a self-defense round in it, I would check first because it may not feed as well.
Sure. Now, this is just for taking to the range.
So. Okay. Well, great. And a P-08 is a cool gun. I like that.
Oh yeah, it's you know, I saw those all in the old movies, and it's a neat gun.
Yep, very good.
Thank you.
Yep, bye bye. Thanks for the call. We have got Tom from Northfield Township on ballistic testing. Hi, Tom. What are you getting an itchy testing finger there?
Oh yeah, I am, but not with the weather the way it is. But I have got an article here out of Shooting Times, their April issue. That probably isn't out yet, but that'll add even more confusion to bullets and loading and things like that.
What's that?
Okay. Back in the 90s, they did some testing on 40 cal and 10mm bullets. And they did some testing with 180 grain jacketed hollow point. Now, this was Speer that was doing the testing.
Okay.
The bullets later on became Speer gold dots.
Okay,
well, they tested them out, and the 40 cal and the 10mm were loaded for the same speed. They shot at 980 feet per second, the same bullet, the 180 grain jacketed hollow point.
Okay.
What they found out was that the 10mm bullet was expanding 30% larger than the 40 cal, the same bullet fired out of the 40 cal. And, you know, that's a significant amount.
Huh.
And they were scratching their heads about that. And then they did some high-speed test, well, low, you know,
right,
camera testing. And what they found out was that the Smith & Wesson had to be loaded at higher pressure to get the same speed as the 10 millimeter. The 10 millimeter was loaded at 24,000 PSI, and the 40 cal was loaded at 32,000 PSI.
Well, you know, I was going to say, when you said they were loaded to have the same velocity, are you talking the same powder load? Because technically what you would have would be, if you were using the same grains of propellant, you would have it in a smaller, much smaller area on the 40 Smith & Wesson than on the 10 millimeter. So you would have a looser pack of powder in the 10 millimeter, and you may get higher pressures. Is that what they found?
Well, they had the higher pressure in the 40 cal.
Okay.
They had to load that to a higher pressure to get the 980, whereas on the 10 millimeter, maybe the barrel was longer or something, but it shot out at the 1080 at a lower pressure.
Okay.
And what they found out was that the 40 cal bullet was deforming in the barrel, and they called it slugging up, where it was stretching. And because of the higher pressure, it was actually hardening the lead in the bullet, and so it wouldn't expand as much when it went into the ballistic gel.
Really?
Yeah. And they were scratching their heads over that, and then they found out what was wrong, and then they decided, well, you know, we can't use the same bullet in the 10 millimeter or the 40 cal that we're using in the 10 mil. You know, they changed.
You know,
this was back in the 90s.
I'm going to have to read that article, because that is counting on the firing pulse to change the makeup of the metallurgical properties of the projectile. And that seems weird. I don't think that I've ever heard of anybody doing that.
Well, they didn't either, but that's what happened. Now, the article is called Ballistic Specs and Quirks. And I don't know if you have the Shooting Times April issue yet.
No, and I don't normally get that, but I can get that. So I will find that and get that. Shooting Times is one of the NRA publications, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
If it is or not, but I get a bunch of them, and they got that, and it's under, and the paragraph is under pressure and expanding bullets.
Interesting.
And it gives the information, and you know how they figured it out, and you know, like I said, they changed the bullet design. They found out that you just can't take a 40 or a 10 millimeter bullet, and you know, okay, we got 180 grain, you know, bullet, because 10 millimeter and 40
right.
cal are the same diameter, and they go, yeah, we'll just put that in the 40 cal, we'll put this in the 10 millimeter, and we're all set.
Well, I got to say that's one of those epiphanies that would mean that same thing, like you would have different properties from and I use a 420, a .429 bullet in 44 Magnums and 44 Specials, but they have a tremendously different pulse, you know, much more than the difference between a 40 cal and a 40 Smith & Wesson and a 10. So are you doing the same thing when you're using a, you know, like a Nosler sporting round, one of the jacketed hollow points in a 40 cal versus in a 44 special versus a 44 Magnum? That's interesting.
Yeah, it could be. Well, that's why I said this even adds more confusion to ballistic testing.
Well, that's an interesting. Now, I would imagine there's probably a threshold below where it doesn't make a difference. Like maybe the 40 cal doesn't Well, but I don't know. That would you would think that because a 10 millimeter has a stronger pulse and higher pressure typically than a 40.
Yeah. But this was a bullet. They call it the 10 millimeter light. Back then, they had a 10 millimeter. They call it 10 millimeter light. They fired at 980, and it was 180 grain jacketed hollow point. And then they had to, or they loaded the Smith and Wesson to shoot at the same velocity. Normally, the Smith & Wesson would have been shooting at a lower velocity.
Yeah, that is
980, but they loaded it up, so they wanted to see. And when they did, they found out all kinds of things were happening.
Yeah, well, inquiring minds want to know. You want to find out these things. So that's very – I'll have to look that up and read that, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an interesting article. It caught my eye, and I thought, I can – call in about this because it's actually interesting.
As opposed to other things we talk about that aren't actually interesting?
No.
Okay, Tom. Hey, well, thank you. I'm looking forward to the weather lightening up a bit so we can get out and do some ballistic testing, okay?
Yeah, I'm getting antsy for it, but, the winter's going to be on for a while.
Yeah, we're going to have to give us time to find one of those 30 super carries then, huh?
Yeah.
I wonder if any listeners out there seen one, held one, or bought one yet. That would be interesting. I know that they've announced them, but I don't know if they're actually available or not. So we'll see. Well, thanks, Tom, for the call today. And thanks. I'll look that up in Shooting Times.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
Yep.
Ballistic quirks. Okay. Well, let's see. I was going to talk about, and I hate talking about the politics crap and the legal crap, but we have to do that occasionally. And this was, some of you may have read this week where the National Shooting Sports Foundation released a statement because what happened is they've been, through the news, they have been talking about how the Remington paid off the parents of the Sandy Hook shooting victims, okay? Of the 20 kids, I don't remember how many there were that actually were in this lawsuit, but the all through the news, it was like Remington admits and pays off, settlement with the Sandy Hook parents, okay? That's interesting. By the way, the lawyers then for the plaintiffs, for the parents, they came out and the lawyers for the plaintiffs, they came out and said, this sends a message to the gun industry that you cannot be sheltered from liability, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Well, the fact is that really is not what happened, okay? This settlement was not between Remington Outdoor Company, ROC, okay? It effectively doesn't exist anymore. It was cut up and sold off. That's why Ruger got Marlin and some other people got Remington Bullet Manufacturing and, yada, yada, yada. They all cut it. Okay. But the thing is that the settlement was reached between the plaintiffs and various insurance carriers that held the Remington Outdoor Company as a client. Okay. So it was insurance companies that probably said, well, let's cut our losses here and we're not going to, this could go on forever. We'll settle out of court. Okay. But it was not Remington, the company, and actually it was Remington Outdoor Company that owned Bushmaster, and Bushmaster is the one that they claimed did the, and what they got it on was not on the fact that they used the firearms for killing little kids in a school. It was the fact that they said, well, it was the way that Remington marketed and Bushmaster marketed the firearm, with things like consider your man card reinstated and stuff like that. And it tried to paint that the fundamentals, the the plaintiffs never produced any evidence that Bushmaster Advertising had any bearing or influence over Nancy Lance's decision to legally purchase a Bushmaster rifle. She wouldn't buy it because it said, consider your man card reinstated, okay? Nor on the decision of the murderer, Adam Lanza, to steal that rifle, kill his mother in her sleep, and then go on to commit the other crimes, okay? So they just were cutting their losses, and it was the insurance company, not Remington. So what they finally said, though, is, finally, this settlement orchestrated by insurance companies has no impact on the strength and efficacy of the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, the PLCAA, which remains the law of the land. The PLCAA will continue to block baseless lawsuits that attempt to blame lawful industry companies for the criminal acts of the third party. This is like suing Ford Motor Company for drunk drivers, or a beer company for somebody who drank too much at a bar when it's their own personal responsibility, not the beer company's. So at any rate, we have got Tom from Detroit on Molly Bullets. Hi, Tom. How are you? What's your take on these Molly Bullets?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about it. You know, that Remington you were just talking about?
Right.
You know, I'm wondering if there'll ever even be a payout. I'm presuming that it was in district court and that there's some kind of collusion going on, against the gun industry. And, you know, to make insurance more expensive or something of that nature. The thing is, I recall in Title 28 of United States Code, district courts don't have jurisdiction where there's collusion. So, I mean, I forget the actual statute number. You could find it pretty easy just, you know, looking up Title 28
yeah.
online and, you know, going through the index, you'd find collusion in there. It's but so if the district court didn't have jurisdiction, they couldn't make any kind of deal or anything like that in district court. If I was a big stockholder of that insurance company, I think I'd sue.
Now, it was the Connecticut Supreme Court that wrote this. It was
okay. So that's different.
Yeah, and it was called Soto versus Bushmaster. And they were suing Bushmaster for its advertising policies and stuff, but Remington Outdoor Company is the one that owned Bushmaster at the time. So that's the deeper pockets and the deeper insurance policies. It's all,
I still think there's some kind of collusion going on against the gun industry by, you know, the liberals for what, I don't know what their reasoning is.
Oh, there is everywhere. I mean, we talked about this last week with the mayor in San Jose that says that all gun owners have to carry liability insurance and stuff like that, even though there is none available like that. You know what I mean? It's There is absolutely an attempt. They know they can't take the guns away, so they're trying to make them so expensive and make the ammunition so expensive and everything that they go for the long game, Tom, is that they know that if they make it too expensive and politically incorrect for moms and dads to take their youngsters out to the range and teach them to shoot and hunt and stuff, and they end up living with growing up with guns, and they become the future gun owners, okay? You make it too expensive for grandpa or dad to take the kids to the range because ammo costs, are out the roof, then you have to have insurance for it and all that kind of stuff, and you're gotta have a lock in your a safe in your house, and they can come and check it, and they make it too onerous for people to enjoy the shooting sports. Eventually it'll die out, right? Which is what we're seeing in some of the hunting and stuff going on.
Yeah, I guess they figure they'll take half of something if they can't, rather than all or nothing, and then it's one compromise after another.
Right.
On the Molly Bullets, I've used a lot of Molly Bullets, and I never really had a problem with corrosion. I got the Midway Molly that you can't get anymore, and that they say that's not hygroscopic. It doesn't attract moisture. The thing is that the only downside, if I'm shooting all Molly bullets, it seems to build up in the bore. What I usually do is I'll take just a cleaning patch with penetrating oil on there. Croil's probably the best.
Right.
But any penetrating oil works. And I run that through there. That seems to take a lot of the excess off of there. I can look down the muzzle. Well, I got a 7X magnifying visor and a flashlight, and I can see kind of the condition of, you know, what it looks like in there if there's a lot of molly. It's hard to get it out, all out, but I generally don't want to get it all out. If I actually clean a rifle all the way down to the metal, get all the copper and everything out, when I go out, I like to maybe shoot the first two or three rounds of molly bullets, and then the jacketed bullets after that. It just seems to, the rifle just seems to run smoother. The molly, in my opinion, it keeps from a lot of the copper fouling from building up, and just those few rounds, yeah, it seems to treat the inside of the barrel, as far as I can tell. And then I'll shoot maybe, depending on how many I have, I shoot maybe 1 in 10 or maybe 1 in 20 in a magazine, a molly, if I have them. I basically got a bunch of molly-coated full metal jacket bullets and things like that.
I think that's probably, it's like then when you're shooting them periodically, it's like you're reapplying the molly, right?
Yeah, it just seems to have prevent copper fouling. I never exclusively shot, like went out and shot, you know, 300 or 400 rounds of just molly bullets though. So I don't know what would happen if it would, you know, would build up in there and build up the pressures. You know, and when these guys are talking about accuracy, they're, you know, whether the jacketed bullets or the molly bullets are more accurate, I think they're probably talking like an eighth of an inch at 100 yards.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and they're arguing about that. And, you know,
oh,
to
I know.
Me, I like not, you know, not having all the copper building up, but
I agree. I think, and by the way, there's so many variables. Stop and think about where I have guns that like certain weights of bullets. I have guns that like certain bullets other than others, you know, with a rifle. And there, and then you've got to consider the variation between potentially barrel bore. Are these new guns that you're starting out with, or is this a gun that's a 75-year-old Winchester 70, and Lord knows what people shot out of it before, but I can tell you that back in the 50s, it wasn't molly bullets, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't shoot them out of a new gun, because I like to break in the barrel, and, you know, it's been said that if you start out using molly bullets, you'll never get the barrel broken in properly.
Yeah, so there's so many variables out there, and I guess I got to say, if it works for you, great. And if it doesn't work for you, then don't use them. You know what I mean? That's pretty much, and it's the same thing where people, oh, I only use Nosler partitions. Well, what about ELDXs? No, I don't use those. You know, I don't know. There's so many variables there, so... Well, Tom, thanks for the input today. I appreciate it. Okay. We're coming to the bottom of the first hour here, and we will continue with more discussions about firearms, guns, laws, silly things that the Department of Justice is doing, all sorts of stuff out there, and maybe even just some good old-fashioned gun talk. That'll be fun, too. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
And welcome back to the second hour of Trigger Talk Radio here on February 19th. And we're going to talk about guns. This is Dick Kupke, your host. And we just spent the last hour talking about things like chrome molly bullets and all sorts of fun things like that. We're going to talk about more gun offerings. We're going to talk about some politics and hopefully have subjects from you guys in this half, too. People call and ask about, we had a guy call about a P08 pistol that he had and 9mm, and what's the best bullet to go for that and stuff like that. So you never know what we're going to talk about. What I was going to bring up first here was that, and this is where you got to watch out what's going on with the administration, what's going on with states. Do you remember that we pretty much have red and blue states out there, and the red states are the good guys and the blue states are the bad guys, okay? And the bad guys are always trying to do things to infringe upon your rights, whether it's the in California, and I'll get into some, I think I've got a couple California stories here today too, but there's good states out there trying to do things that are keeping gun owners and the Second Amendment safe. And one of those states is Missouri. Missouri actually passed, and they had their governor sign into law a thing called the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And this act was to prevent, and it was signed into law by Governor Mike Parsons last year, it's to prevent people from, or law enforcement from enforcing federal laws that are against the Second Amendment. So if somebody comes out and says, like California, you know, type law, well, we're not going to allow any magazines over 10 rounds, okay? So we want all the local police and state police and everybody to start confiscating those things, okay? Well, no, that's against the Second Amendment. You can't do that, okay? So they came up with the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Well, that was going just fine. Everybody said, oh, that isn't that nice. Okay, we came, do you remember over the last couple of years when people were talking about that? Well, we need to be a sanctuary city or a sanctuary state or a sanctuary township to try to keep people from imposing laws against the Second Amendment on us. And so at any rate, the thing is that they actually, the state had decided to sue the state. I want to say, let's see, it was Attorney General. Actually, this was another one that just came in. Let me see who actually filed the say. In Missouri Supreme Court last week, there was a case that's being tried that is against the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And they seem to be losing. Okay, that the act is going to win because they feel they've got the law on their side and stuff like that. And the arguments were being discussed last week and everything. And it appeared that the lawsuit against the state of Missouri was losing because they don't feel they have. I want to say their arguments were not very strong and stuff like that. Well, so what happens is Merrick Garland comes out and the Department of Justice sues Missouri over the Preservation Act. And it's interesting because, you want to say, why are they doing that now? Well, a couple of things. Biden's group has been getting bad press from people about not doing enough on guns. Hey, you said you were going to, you're going to take away all the AR-15s and AK-47s, aren't you? And you're going to get rid of high-capacity magazines, and you're going to get universal background checks and blah, blah, blah. And none of that has happened, okay? And so even guys like, what's his name, David Hogg, the guy who was from the Parkland shooting, who wasn't actually there. He was at home, but he sure makes noise like he was there. And he's a survivor, even though he was home, okay? But the thing is that He even said, I'm disappointed in the Biden administration. Well, so Merrick Garland comes out and decides to join into this lawsuit this week. And one of the problems is that, I want to say, they actually go, well, we've been talking about this for months. Well, you guys could have filed a suit, but you were happy to let Illinois or Missouri continue to be batting this back and forth until now you're getting some bad press. So now you got to step out and make it sound like you're doing something. Now, the actual Preservation Act is actually pretty good. The following federal acts, laws, and executive orders, administration orders, rules, and regulations shall be considered infringements on the people's right to keep and bear arms. This is what that Preservation Act says, okay? As guaranteed by the Second Amendment of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 23 of the Constitution of Missouri, within the borders of this state is these things are considered infringements, but are not limited to any tax, levy, fee, or stamp imposed on firearms, firearm accessories, and ammunition not common to all other goods, okay, and services that might reasonably be expected to create a chilling effect on the purchase or ownership of those items. You know where they want to add big insurance policy requirements or big taxes or big fees? If they're not adding it to everything, then it's being imposed to have a chilling effect on the purchase of ownership of guns for law-abiding citizens. Any registration or tracking of firearms, firearm accessories, or ammunition. Any registration or tracking of the ownership of firearms, firearm accessories, or ammunition. This is where they're trying to get things like ammunition permits to purchase ammunition and having to verify that you have a gun that's going to shoot the ammunition that you're buying. All those things are considered to be a deterrent towards the Second Amendment. Any act forbidding the possession, ownership, use, or transfer of firearms, firearm accessories, or ammunition by law-abiding citizens, and any act ordering the confiscation of firearms, firearm accessories, and ammunition from law-abiding citizens. So that's where they're talking about things like assault weapons bans and gun buybacks and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here because the DOJ is getting involved with it. Let's see. We have got Mark from Howell about an AR-15/22 conversion. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hello, Dick. Good afternoon to you today, sir, Mr. Trigger Talk. Yes, I purchased a Colt AR-15 Sporter here a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, and it's one of the original pre-band models with, you know, the Colt optics on it. The handle on top, you know, it's not modified in any. It's got the, you know, the stock on the back. That's that lightweight stock, but it's not like a folding stock
right,
or anything. So it's all Colt, you know, from the factory. I was just informed by my FFL guy who works out of his house over in Marion Township, and they're in Brighton. He's just on the borderline there, within Brighton. But he says I've got this 22. I think it's an LR conversion kit that fits in there, which will allow me to fire 22 rounds through this, as opposed to the 223s or 5.56s. And I was just looking it up, and I guess there's different manufacturers out there that made these over the years. And I just read something about a guy dry fired one, and it destroyed his firing pin or something after he shot about 50,000 rounds through it, but. So I'm learning about that. I don't have it in hand because he had a knee operation. So until he gets better, I can't get over there and grab that thing. But by that time, the weather will be warming up, and I can install it and fire this order at a cheaper, you know, running 22s through it.
I want to say, as a matter of fact, I have an article today. I was just reading a story about it. It was just posted yesterday. There's a company called CMMG.
Yes, that was one of the ones I just read in this guy. Place where people, you know, chime in on it.
Yeah, and the CMMG 22 long rifle bolt conversion budget plinking solution. And I want to say there have been a number of these over the years. I've heard some people swear by them and some people swear at them. And it all depends on how well it's made, how well it's, you know, designed, things like that. So is the one that you're thinking about getting from this friend a new one, or is it a used one, or what? And you don't need
It's a brand new and never been utilized. And I'm not sure what brand it is, but, you know, very could likely be the CMMG. But anyways, he just said, I happen to have this because I when I got the Sporter, I went through his license, you know, and it went to his house, and I went and did all the paperwork, picked it up. But he's had knee surgery since, and he says, I can't get downstairs to retrieve it. So it'll be at least a month till I can, you know, get my hands on it.
Well, I would say look into it, and you will be able to find online. There will be all sorts of if you go to AR15.com, there'll be subjects on conversions in there. You can go to RimfireCentral.com and look at AR conversions on that. Some of them are, well, like I said, well thought out. They also have to have a decent magazine that goes with them that, that, you know, extends up and just holds the smaller rounds like that. I want to say, I would say that I would be careful if you find one that people are having problems with, and this guy has one that's one that people are having problems with, I'd pass on it, okay?
No, but this is brand new. This is brand new, never been used, and he's always giving me deals because I guess he likes me or something. I don't know. I'd purchase some other firearms from him, but he's only going to charge me $125 for the whole kit, and I said, brand new for $125. I just looked them up, and they're more than that if I go buy them elsewhere.
Yeah, again, it depends on the quality of that kit. I'd be interested, Mark, in knowing what brand it is and stuff like that.
Okay. Okay, what I'll do is I'll ask him what brand it is, and then I'll get back with you on another show and see what you think.
Yeah, because, again, there are ones that have been made for years, and this is not unusual. They make them for 9mm Glocks. They make them for 45s. They make them for – actually, Colt made – one, they made a 1911 called the Ace back in the 40s and 50s, which is like a 1911, but it's a 22 caliber one. They also, Colt sold its own conversion, okay? And so it's a delicate balance of things like spring pressures and extractors and all that kind of stuff. I am looking at the CMMG one, if you look that up. And that one looks like it's fairly well thought out, but then again, it's how it's made and all that kind of stuff. So, I would say it's a good intent. The other thing you can do is you can pick yourself up like an Smith & Wesson M&P 22, which is essentially an AR in 22 only. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have been looking at some of those as an option. And I think Ruger's got one out now. It just came out in that format. I guess I'll see what this brand is and get back with you. And, you know, he said it's brand new, never been used. That's all I know at this point in time.
No, and that could be good. It could be 10 years old, and it's because it was a crappy one 10 years ago and nobody wanted it. So it's still brand new. And you know what I mean? So just make sure that it's a decent one. So now I'm not disparaging this guy. I'm sure he sells quality stuff, but it's going to depend. And I am hot and cold on these conversion things because it's all in the execution of it. The ones like for the Glocks that they make, that's a great idea, but then they also came out with the Glock 44 and 22, and then there's no reason to have a conversion. You can just buy another gun, okay?
Sure. Well, I'll weigh the pros and cons, and I'll get back with you on it once I find out what brand it is.
Yeah, okay.
And pick your brain once more. Thanks for all the knowledge. I appreciate
it. Yeah, no problem. And it makes a lot of sense because they're a lot less expensive than to shoot. Even though 22s are not as cheap as they used to be, they're still a lot cheaper than 223. So, when you're taking somebody out, now here's the thing, you take it out, you're going to have fun with it, but if it's jamming and not working, it's not worth it. You know what I mean?
Right.
In that
who
case,
who wants to go through that aggravation?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's better off. You might be better off with like I said, a Smith & Wesson M&P 15-22. I'm just trying to look to see what this one goes for. Hold on a second.
Sure.
This CMMG one, a few limited. Hold on. I'm reading. It's usually at the end of the article. And
sure.
They're not telling me what it costs, darn it. So I don't know why. So, but it does look like it's well made. It's in a they put it in a Smith & Wesson M&P 15, but it'd be the same thing in the Colts. So,
Yeah, that was the kind of reason I was leaning towards it, because I wanted my daughter to fire this Colt gun, actually hold it and get used to it and do it in the 22 and then step up to the larger caliber, you know?
Yeah.
And that was my whole inkling about it, because I just love this gun. I've been wanting to get one for years. And,
is that it's got a bull barrel without a, does it have a regular A2 front sight on it, or does it not have a,
Oh yeah, it's got the triple sight on the front there, you know, that looks like a fork.
Yeah.
And then I've got the optic on there, the Colt optic, which's got the little window or whatever. I don't know what you call those type of sights. It's got kind of a green or orange hue to it when you look through it.
Yeah, like a red dot kind. Yeah.
Well, it's got that on the top of the forearm.
Okay.
Forearm, but it's got that triple frog prong thing in the front. Now, it came with the what do you call it on the tip of the barrel there?
It's called a suppressor a flash suppressor.
Yeah, it came with two flash suppressors came with it. It's got the one that is not open that catches on the brush on it right now.
Yeah.
But they gave me it came with the one that has the open ends on it, you know, the ones that used to get caught on the brush.
Yeah. Yep. Actually, those are interesting, too. Do you know what I always laughed when I read this. This was over in Vietnam, and the guys would have, that when they were unloading helicopters and planes and stuff, there would be pallets that had the metal banding around them that would hold things together on them.
Oh, yeah, and they would use those to cut the banding, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. So I always thought that was interesting, which I'm sure was not that good for it, but it didn't hurt anything from a sighting standpoint.
Yeah, they were twisting it like a can opener. Well, you know, ingenuity, they did a lot of that in all the wars. You had to come up with different ideas, you know?
Yep. Hey, well, thanks for the call today, Mark. I appreciate it.
Oh, certainly. Really enjoy the show, and keep it up.
Okay, you bet. So, yeah, well, that's interesting. Mark touched on one of these same subjects I was going to talk about today, which was I thought that the CMMG 22 bolt conversion looked pretty interesting. So, but if it's, I don't know why I can't find a price on it. I'll have to look and see. But I want to say sometimes, like with, I have some regular ARs, it's fine to shoot them, but they are expensive to shoot. The 223s. Now I have a lot of brass and projectiles. I can load them back up again pretty cheap. But the thing is that it's certainly a lot cheaper and easier to just shoot 22 long rifle. And that's one of the reasons when I was talking to last week, I talked about my friend Scott and his desire to get into guns, and he's picking all these hot rods, fancy schmancy guns and stuff. And I said, well, sometimes just a nice old 22 is just the nicest thing to have, like a Ruger 10/22, a Marlin 60, could be a pump like a Remington Speedmaster or a Remington. What are some of the other ones? But I've got a couple of the pumps and even bolt action. They're just fun to shoot. And I want to say if you can get a reliable bolt conversion for an AR-15 and be shooting it, then that's a good deal. That would be great. If it's not reliable, it won't be any fun. Okay, if you're having to, unjam around every other round, that's not fun. And so then you're better off with a purpose-built gun that's meant to be a 22 from the start, as opposed to one that's made for higher calibers and larger bores or larger. And the only reason it works so easy on a 223 is because the bore diameter on the barrel is the same. But and so I couldn't use that in like my 50 Beowulf. it would be like rattling around in there. Okay. So, but the thing is that again, if you have a purpose-built 22 that is much, much more reliable, then it'll be more fun for your youngsters, your daughter, your son, your grandkids, or whatever, and your spouse, then always having to clear jams and stuff like that. Let's see, what was I talking about before? I was talking about Merrick Garland, and that's about all I care about to talk about with him. With the he's putting his thumb on the scale for the Missouri Second Amendment Preservation Act. I think this is an interesting story, too. This is from California, where their attorney general sends a cease and desist letter to a Southern California gun maker. And it's interesting because California's got a whole lot of gun regulations, okay? And they have things on, quote, assault rifles, which is a modern sporting rifle, like an AR-15 or a Ruger 5.56 or something like that. And they have a lot of restrictions on them, okay? And they have things that make them that you can't own them, and they call them features, okay? And they were features like a bayonet mount. Like, you know, that really makes it worse for crime there with having a bayonet mount on it and a suppressor, a flash suppressor. Oh, my goodness, you can't have a flash suppressor. Think about how all the people you're going to go out and go shoot, and they won't be able to see where the flash is coming from. Give me a break, okay? So what happens is when they set up a whole set of rules like that, then the gun makers come out with guns that don't have those features on them, okay? They don't have features like bayonet mounts or like they actually came out with a thing they call a bullet button in California, because you're not supposed to have interchangeable magazines that can't change without a tool. Well, the tool can be the tip of a bullet, so they came out with the thing called a bullet button. And then all sorts of other folding stocks and things like that that were features that they didn't want you to have. So these companies come out with rifles that are featureless. And you know what? One of the ones is that they always talk about prohibiting a pistol grip. And you all know on an AR-15, the pistol grip where it hangs down. Well, technically, it's the decision it is on the pistol grip is how far it hangs down, and is it farther down than the top of the trigger housing and stuff like that. Well, they've come up with a design. This company out there came up with a design, and the company, let's see what they're called, Juggernaut Tactical. And I looked them up, actually. They came up with a design of a pistol grip that curves back and does not hang down so far that it acts as a pistol grip in the manner it was described in the law. And the California AG is going, well, you guys are just designing guns to get around the law. And it's like, well, then that's how laws work, okay? You either have something that meets the law or something that doesn't meet the law. And if it meets the law, it's not illegal. So at any rate, we can talk about that in a bit more. And we've got Keith from Fenton. We're going to get to you, Keith, after we get back from the break. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And, gosh, I was just looking up that CMMG conversion kit is $229 MSRP. So it'd probably be less, you know, in the store. And that includes three magazines. So at any rate, but I'm also looking up, and there's a lot of things on YouTube about how to fix the problems with them and failure to feed and failure to eject and stuff. So to Mark, I want to say, look up the one that he's got and see when you before you buy it, make sure that it has a good reputation online, okay? We have got Keith from Fenton on Remington Rifle Ammo. Hi, Keith. How are you?
Hey, good. This is Keith. Thanks for taking my call. My problem is this. I've got a new Remington. It was a new inbox Remington 700 rifle, but okay. It's the old Remington company. And okay. It's the mountain rifle version. It's in a 280 Remington caliber. And I bought three different brands of ammo. And I can fire two of the brands, Hornady and Federal. But I have some Winchester branded ammo that won't even chamber in my gun. And I bought two boxes of it. I tried, you know, different rounds from each box and with the same result. So well, this has never happened to me before. So what do you think I should do?
I want to say that's it. And are you sure, absolutely, that now you brought three brands and the Remington ones, that and they're in 280 Remington is what you're saying?
Yes. All three are 280 Remington, not the Ackley Improved. I know that's
kind of
more popular caliber now, but this is straight up 280 Remington.
Well, there's all sorts of different, there's all sorts of Wildcat things that people do to them and stuff like that. But if it is a 280 Remington and it is actually a factory standard round like that, then when you look at it, is it the same grain bullets and everything?
They're all in the neighborhood. They're either 140 or 150.
Okay. And I want to say, though, are they, when you look at them, do you have a micrometer or anything? Can you check to make sure that somebody didn't swap something out? Does it say 280 on the head stamp of the Winchesters?
I can double check it when I get home, but I mean, I bought them from a reputable store. And I tried like two or three out of each box. So if somebody slipped in one, you know, goofball,
I would say, round, I mean, I would look at the differences. Here's the only thing I can imagine. This was a new in the box rifle in 280 Remington. And yes. Technically, when factory ammo is made, it all meets the same requirements from the. Now, there can be differences in length of the overall length depending on the projectile. And so it might be a little longer or a little long or shorter one than the other. And they may have a different, what's called the ogive. It's the shape of the projectile. It can either be, like real pointy and certain, like a low drag one versus ones that are more rounded and stuff like that. When you actually set them next to each other, do they look identical?
I can look when I get home. I'm driving.
Okay.
I can double check when I get home.
I hear your little ones in the back seat, so.
Yeah, you hear my kids.
Well, that's good, and they're getting to listen to Trigger Talk, too, so then that's good.
Yeah.
But yeah. I would say, here's what I would do. First of all, I'd check the head stamp and make sure that it actually says 280 Winchester or 280 Remington on it, okay? Mm-hmm. Because somebody may have mixed something up. It's not unheard of that something wasn't boxed incorrectly. I mean, that could happen, okay? But I would, and then what I would do, now you bought it new. Did you buy it from a gun store?
Yeah.
Which place did you buy it from?
Williams and Davison.
Okay,
where the rifle came from.
Yeah,
ammo came from different places, but
okay.
Yeah.
I've got to believe that if it's chambering and fire, did you actually fire it with the other two rounds?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But one of them won't chamber, then you've got it's got the incorrect shoulder on it, or it's got the incorrect diameter, or maybe it's got a bullet that's too long and it's intersecting with the actual rifling early, which is, it's called the jump. Normally, when you put a rifle bullet in a chamber, there's a little space between the end of the projectile and the starting of the rifling of the barrel, okay? And that's called the bullet jump. And it could be that you've got a longer bullet in there, and maybe it's a short chamber, and when you go to close the bolt, it's actually trying to force the bullet into the rifling. So take a look in now. When you say it won't go in, is it you can get it in? It goes in, but the bolt won't close.
Yeah, I can't put the handle down on the bolt.
Yeah, see that now. When you pull the one back out again that you tried that on, do you see any marks on the tip of the bullet?
I didn't notice any. I tried it a couple different times, and I didn't. I don't remember. It was last deer season when I did this.
Okay.
I don't remember seeing anything unusual. It was the brand of Winchester that has the, I don't know if it's called Molly Coat or it's the black coated bullet, and I didn't notice any marks on the bullet.
Okay. Yeah, see, boy, this seems really weird to me. You might have gotten something where somebody was in the store and looking at something, and they put, you know, they put something back in the wrong box or something. Because does it almost close, but it won't rotate down?
Yeah, yeah.
See, I think you might have a bullet length issue, or a chamber length issue. Take a look at do what I said. Put the round in. Go in and go to close it and start to toggle it down, you know, to rotate it down. Mm-hmm. And then if it locks up and won't go any further, then go backwards and eject it and look at the end of the projectile to see if you've got rifling marks on the end.
Okay.
Okay. And if not there, then I would take and set the cartridges next to each other and check the overall length of the brass and the length of the shoulder from the base of the bullet.
Okay.
Okay. I'd
all
like
right.
to hear
thank
about
you very
this.
Much.
So let me know what happens when you find it out, okay?
Okay. All right, we'll do.
Great. Thanks for the
thank
call.
You.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Gosh, that's a toughie. But it can be that especially with a new in the see I want to say, when you've got not a new-in-the-box gun, you could have a gun that has had some work done on it. You could have a gun that has had some, usually what would happen is you would have too much headspace, and that is where there's room between the way cartridge fits in the chamber and when you close the bolt. If you don't have enough head space, then you can't close the bolt. The locking lugs are not in far enough to be able to turn when you go to close the bolt. So I don't know without seeing it what this is an interesting one, but I would suggest that if you cannot see anything physically different and any marks on the bullet from touching the rifling or anything, I would take the rifle back to the gun store where you got it. I don't know if they have a gunsmith there. You just might have a really tight gun, and that the for some reason the Winchester ammo was a little long. And things like that can happen. So they make millions of rounds, and maybe something was out of adjustment on the machining or something. So, but it would actually have to be a pretty obvious probably when you put the three rounds next to each other, and these two work and this one doesn't. Let's see what the difference is. Okay. Gosh, good call. I like that kind of call. Let's see. SIG debuts a 380. Variant of the P365. That's interesting. They just announced this yesterday. And what they're doing is promising a concealed carry option for for those that a P365 with less recoil and more control. Sig Sauer on Thursday announced a 380 ACP model of the popular microcompact. So do you remember last week we were talking about with a listener and he had a wrist issue? And I said, you know, sometimes people are chambering these 9mm in 380s to give it less recoil and stuff. Well, here's a possibility for you. Obviously, SIG is responding, just like so many of the other companies, that that sometimes people like having the greater capacity and stuff, but they don't like having the extra snap that you get out of a 9mm versus a 380. So very interesting. So there you have it. Another possibility. He asked, I talked about the Ruger 5.7, some of the other ones. Now, I got to tell you, though, this SIG P365 and 380 would have somewhat less recoil than the 9mm, but not as little as going with the 5.7 by 28 like the 22 magnums we were talking about, or even a 22 long rifle for at the range. Let's see what else we got here. This one, here's a story I liked. Well, I like them all. I just have a lot of fun reading gun articles and stories and stuff. I like to find stuff more about the guns than things that are all politics and stuff like that. So this is a story about GOEX. We've got a call. I'll look to see. Derek's typing away furiously. We've got Phil from Detroit on Williams Gun Store. Hi, Phil.
Howdy, Dick. How are you enjoying the beautiful weather?
Oh, it's a beautiful day out today. Cold,
yeah,
but beautiful.
I'm kind of surprised you're not familiar with Williams Gun Site. I've been going there since I was a kid, and I'm 75.
This is Williams that does the...
In Davison. They
yeah.
got complete gunsmithing and range and everything.
Yeah, they do. They also do... They actually have branded Williams Gun Sights, don't they?
They do. They make the Williams Aperture famous gun sight used on match rifles and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So that's I wasn't
and lots of other sights too.
Yeah, yeah. So that's so I'm sure that they would be more than adequate if he's got something. But what do you think? Don't you think he either has some odd sized ammo or a real tight chamber or something? I'm not sure what's going on with that.
I don't know. That's a good one. There's all kinds of things you could speculate on. But, yeah, like it's about what you can do to check it out to make sure your bullets, the old guy with the bullets, not actually hitting on the lead of the rifling. You put some molly, some graphite, whatever on there, and try to put it in and then extract it and look at it, and you'll see the rifling marks if it's going too far into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The only and actually, if there's another issue like
the case could be trimmed too long, and that could be hitting on the shoulder for the,
right.
the case neck.
The case could be trimmed too
sure.
long. It could be that the shoulder is mispositioned somehow, and you would see that if you
but
actually.
It's not a Magnum, so it doesn't have the belt.
Yeah, doesn't have a belt. Which is what Magnums use a belt for. Positioning in the chamber, right?
So, we know that, yeah. I load enough of them.
Yeah, and so the thing is that I want to say it could very well be if the shoulders are not formed correctly and if you tried to slam it and get it shut, you might end up, you know, like bulging or crunching the shoulders some. So there's a number of things, but I got to say, I think that I would go back to the gun store and say, hey, there's something going on funny here. I don't understand what's happening. So
yeah, they'll sure figure it out because, yeah, they got great gunsmiths. I go there for stuff. I'm a gunsmith, okay? Sometimes I have to go to them with something.
Yep, yep. Well, good. Well, thank you for the input today. I appreciate it.
Enjoy that sunshine.
Oh, yeah, I will, even though it's only 15 degrees out there. So, yep. I've got grandkids at home today. So
God bless them.
So we'll have fun when I get home. But normally we would go out. Gosh, last week we were out in the snow going sledding down the hills and stuff. Not this week. It's going to be a little too cold. So.
Yep. You were tromping up and down the hills with them, huh?
I was.
God bless you. You're doing great.
Well,
of course, you're just a whippersnapper. You're nowhere near as old as I am.
I'm just about 65. So
yeah. I wish I was about 65.
Okay. Hey, I'm going through that wonderful thing called signing up for Medicare right now.
You're not going to love it.
And I actually happened to. I had to go to the Social Security office on Tuesday, because I had set all my stuff in, and man, they got back with me in a day. You know what I mean? Huh. I applied online, but then they came back and they said, "We need to have proof of your citizenship." And I wanted to say, and you know why? It's because I was born in Japan. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so I had all the paperwork that showed I was born of American parents in the 8169th Army Hospital in Tsuruma, Japan.
Well, I tell you what, you get the platinum care if you're a wetback from BFE somewhere.
Well, I know. I was going to say.
And they don't ask any questions. You don't need any ID. Totally undocumented.
Yeah, here I am. I'm 65, and my dad was in the Navy, and I've got all the documents that show that, and I've got to prove my citizenship, but these. Other people do not have to vote or live or get benefits, right? So,
or drive or on and on and on. Well, you might as well laugh because crying don't help.
Yep. Okay. We'll see you later, Phil. Thanks.
All right. God bless.
Yeah. Bye bye. Let's see. So, anyway, I was talking about this was a story that came out last year, and it's about GOEX black powder. Remember, I like to shoot muzzle loaders, okay? And I'm sure a lot of you do, too. And GOEX is at one of the companies. They actually have three companies. They call it GOEX Reenactor, GOEX Black Powder, and then they have, what's the other one, their other brand? Old Lunsford, something like that. But they make the black powder that you use both for, they use it in reenactors when, you know, like when people are doing Civil War or Revolutionary War reenacting. They use it in, I have an old cap and ball, actually a percussion cap rifle that I like to shoot, a muzzle loader. And so I like to use real black powder. I like to use it partly because I like the way it smells, okay? And if you use bacon grease on your patches, it smells like bacon and eggs in the morning when you... But the thing is that GOEX decided to close its factory. And I was like, oh, no, what are you going to do? And it was actually the Hodgson Powder Company that decided to close. It was the only remaining commercial black powder factory in the United States. And I thought, man, that's terrible. What are we going to use instead now? Well, a sister company called Estes Energetics. Okay. Estes is the company that makes model rockets, which I also do. I had no idea that Estes model rocket engines used black powder in them from GOEX. How about that? And I'm sure that this was part of their thought, because part of their powder in their makeup of their engines is GOEX black powder. And model rocketry is still very popular. Matter of fact, I just got my new Estes catalog, and my neighbor, shout out to Ted there, brought me over a gift, a Saturn V great big de-engined model rocket kit for me to build and do with my grandkids. I said, oh, this is going to be great. Well, I'm sitting here reading this story going, wow, and now Estes Estes Energetics is buying the GOEX plant in Minden, Louisiana, and they're going to continue to make GOEX powders, not only for themselves, because they need them for their model rocket engines, but for the firearms industry. So that's an outstanding new revelation or complication. This actually was just announced on February 1st that Estes acquires closed GOEX powder factory. So that's really good news. Let's see. Michigan firearm reform group eyes 2024 initiative if laws are not changed. And a group of Michigan advocates seek to curb gun violence launched an exploratory committee to consider a 2024 ballot initiative that would impose firearm restrictions in Michigan. What they're trying to do is they can't get the legislature to do it. So what happens is they are going to try to put it on the ballot and have a vote on it. The End Gun Violence Michigan urged GOP-led legislature to pass meaningful gun reform in the coming months or face a possible petition initiative. The group launched its efforts on the fourth anniversary of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High in Parkland, Florida. You know, they always have, it's always anniversary of something. It might be 4 years or 6 years or 3.5 years or whatever, but it's always the anniversary of some tragedy that they can dig up. He said, we can do this. We can pass common sense gun reforms that protects our communities, okay? And they're going to do it. The group listed End Gun Violence, and the people behind it are the Episcopal Diocese of Michigan, the Council of Baptist Pastors of Detroit, March for Our Lives, Michigan Unites, Oakland Forward, Interfaith Action, all these groups. And, oh, man, well, we need to do something. You got to do something. Okay, what are they going to do? Okay, well, they're going to have to, they want to hold some community listening meetings and research the most effective gun measures and raising resources. Oh, another group to raise resources. Well, all you got to do is tell George Soros and stuff. He'll give you millions of dollars to be as an anti-gun candidate or an anti-gun, something on the ballot measure. I got to say, I don't know if that would actually work in Michigan. There are certainly areas that you might pick up anti-gun voters, Ann Arbor, maybe Detroit, but you would think, well, there's an awful lot of guns in Detroit. I'm sure that the bad guys aren't going to vote for getting rid of guns. So I don't know. Maybe we should say go ahead, go at it. Let's see if you can get a ballot measure on there to improve gun reforms and, red flag laws and safety storage measures and stuff like that. I don't think that you'll get there. I don't think that the people of Michigan would vote for this. Take a look at the number of new firearm sales each year. Look at the number of, 40, 60, 80,000 CPL holders every year. CPL holders vote, and they vote for guns, okay? Hunters vote, and they vote for guns. And more people. And they hate this in California, and they hate this in all these anti-gun states. More and more people are buying their first guns. 8 million people last year bought their first guns. In the last 2 years, it's been like 15 million people have been first-time gun owners. And it's because they don't like what they see going on with defund the police and all of these light on crime bills where people get out within, I want to say, 3 hours after being charged with something, they're out on bail. And there's no bail because that's unfair. That's racist, to have bail on these things. So I got a feeling that they could go ahead and try to put it on the ballot. If they even got enough signatures and stuff to get it on the ballot, I don't think they'll have enough actual votes from law-abiding gun owners and from people with common sense to try to do something about it. So, at any rate, so we had fun today. We had interesting talks about 22 conversions and 380s and all sorts of things going on. I will look into dumbbell slugs for next week, and we'll talk about them. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.